This is a conversation with a Belgian lady named Pearl Fashion. The interviewer is Lee Krieger. Mrs. Fashion is 76 years old and was born in Gardner Township in Door County, Wisconsin in 1899. This interview took place on Tuesday, October 28, 1975, in her parlor at her house at 425 Fremont Street in Algoma, Wisconsin. Okay, Pearl, could you give a description of some of the festive holidays that went on in Belgium, especially St. Nicholas Day, the things they did?
Well, St. Nicholas Day was celebrated for the children. That was the day that the children got gifts and fruit and candy and things. They didn't at Christmas time, because Christmas time was really a church holiday long ago. They dressed up, somebody dressed up to look like Santa Claus, and although they called him St. Nicholas. Mm-hmm. And he had a black man that came with him. Somebody dressed up with a black mask on, and he had a stick and some coal or pieces of wood to give to the bad boys and girls. We were so afraid of that black man, but St. Nicholas was good, of course, and he would shoo the black man out after a while and give us candy and oranges, and the oranges were a treat then because we weren't in the stores very much, only on special days like that. Mm. We lived so far from a shopping center that it was mostly homemade candy, taffy and an apple and things like that we got, and some little gifts. After a while, though, the people wanted to become Americans, and then they celebrated just St. Nicholas Day. They'd get a little bit of candy, but they had Santa Claus come then. We were Americanized, of course. And then we got the Christmas gifts, like anybody else, on Christmas Eve. And the Christmas feast, of course, dinner and things like that.
Could you tell what the costume was like for St. Nicholas?
He looked like Santa Claus, pictures of Santa Claus. Of course, they just had a big fur coat, usually, because they didn't have a red suit. Fur coat, but they did have the masks. I don't know where they got those. I suppose somebody brought them from Marinette when they brought the hay over to sell, or Green Bay maybe. Had a mask with a beard, and maybe it was homemade too. I don't remember that so long ago, but I know they had a black mask. I don't know if the man, the sleigh bell would ring, I remember that. And then several of the men that were around, the uncles would say, "Oh, we'll go out and hold St. Nicholas' reindeer," and they go out there, Santa Claus, that was later, "We'll go out and hold the reindeer." So they'd go out, and then they'd hurry and dress, you know, and then they were out there holding the reindeer so they wouldn't go away.
Did that custom come straight from Belgium?
The Santa Claus, but the St. Nicholas. I think that that was a tradition.
Oh, was it celebrated differently in Belgium than
no.
here? Or?
Well, they'd put out wooden shoes. Their wooden shoes to be filled, you know, by St. Nicholas. There they didn't have the Santa Claus. I think that, I don't know now what it is, but how it is, but St. Nicholas Day was the day when the children got the gifts and the
yeah.
Christmas was a church day.
I see. When do you think, about what year, if you could estimate, did they change from St. Nicholas Day being the gift day?
Out
Christmas?
There in Gardner, it must have been in the early 1900s, maybe 1905 or so.
Hmm.
Even before that, maybe 1900.
Hmm. Were there any particular foods that were special for St. Nicholas Day that you
I don't remember?
Remember
that. I don't think so. I don't think we had anything special for St. Nicholas Day except that he would come, you know.
Yeah.
And that evening, Eve, the eve before, the night before.
Yeah. What is the date of St. Nicholas Day, by the way?
December 6th or 7th, 7th, I think.
Could you also tell about New Year's Day and the special foods and celebration that went on then?
For New Year's, they I don't remember that, but they were. We had waffles, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where they had the waffle cookies too. But now when I became acquainted with the waffles, it was for the waffle cookies, and they were made at Christmas time.
Oh, what were those called, and how were they made?
The waffle cookies were they're rich. Cookie made with lots of butter and sugar and flour, a little bit of flour, and flavored with vanilla or lemon. And they're made on top of the stove like a waffle and cooked on one side, and then they turn it, you know, automatic. It isn't like the electric waffle irons. They bake them on both sides at one time. They bake them on one side over on top of the stove, and you have to turn it with the and bake it on the other side. So it takes a long time to bake those waffle cookies, but they're good.
Yeah, I can imagine. Did they have a special name for them?
They call them galettes, and that means waffles, and that's the word for waffles in French, in Belgium.
Did they have special waffle irons for making them?
Yes, a special iron. And the iron that originally came from Belgium for these cookies was brought over by a Latour family in Green Bay. And Mr. Vanderwart worked for him. He was a machinist, and he made a die of this waffle iron. It's smaller than the regular waffle, you know, the cookies are small.
Yeah.
And he made a die of it, and he manufactured, maybe a dozen or more of these things. I think more. I think he did it twice. And so I have one of those.
Mm-hmm.
I bought it from him, and he sold them to those people that otherwise, before he made these extra ones, a lot of people used to borrow this one, and because those cookies keep well if you put them in a sealed jar, you know, or something, and cover them nicely. So people used to borrow that old one. I don't know what became of that one. Maybe it's still in existence somewhere in Green Bay.
Hmm. So do you still make those cookies in the traditional way?
Oh, sure.
Oh, that's really nice.
Well, it's starting pretty soon now.
Do you make any other special holiday foods that you can think of that are Belgian?
That are Belgian? No, I don't. Just say.
What about any other special holidays that were Belgian, just for the record, in case you can remember?
Just the Kermis, of course.
Yeah.
That was a big day. And then the day of after the election, if a man was, that wasn't a, yes, it was too a celebration. When a man became an officer of the township or something like that, they would, the men of his friends, his party, I suppose, would go out and get a big tree, a fir tree, and they'd peel all the branches off, except on the top was left a little Christmas tree, and they'd plant it in front of his house just for an honor. And then he'd buy beer, or he had beer made. If in the olden times, they used to make their beer at home, a lot of it, and they'd have a regular celebration
because
he was elected.
Do they still do that?
In some places, they do. Once in a while, you see a tree like that in front of after an election.
Hmm.
But that was a must in the olden days, you know, it was just an honor to be elected, and that's what they came over for, to take part in the government and from Belgium, and here they had a chance to do it, and I think as long as I can remember, there are Belgians on the county board in Door County, and because there's where the biggest settlement is. And that was for town offices, I'm quite sure.
Yeah. Well, I think we're done with holidays. About church history, I'd like to know what dates you belonged to the Spiritualist Church when you were a child, approximately, if you could.
Well, I was born there at that time, and of course I went there until I went away to school. The high school, there was no high school there, so we went to church there until then.
So about what was the date of that?
That was about from, that church was started in 1876. Not out there, though. That was in Green Bay. Yeah, in Gardner, it was started in 1883 or 86 or something like that. Later than at Green Bay, I guess. But that church in Green Bay was attended by mostly Belgians, too.
Hmm. How old were you when you went away to school and didn't go to the church anymore?
About 13.
I see. So you were pretty young. Huh. Could you tell me where the church was located?
In Gardner Township, and it's County C now, about three miles north of Brussels.
But the church, is it there anymore?
Oh, sure, it's there,
it still
yeah.
is? Is mm-hmm. it still the Spiritualist Church of
yes.
today? Oh,
uh-huh.
I didn't realize that.
Only it goes by a different name now. They call it the, I don't even know. Psychic Church, I guess, or something like that. Hmm. It isn't known as a Spiritualist Church anymore. It's a something psychic.
Could you explain why your family decided to turn to this faith?
Well, they did. My parents joined it when they were quite young, just young people. This preacher that established that church in Green Bay came out there, I guess. I don't know just how they got him to come out there. Don't remember that. I should have looked that up.
Mm.
And then they were unhappy about something that happened in the Catholic Church. Of course, that's what instigated it in the beginning, I guess, because there's quite a few of the Catholic congregation out there left the church because of this controversy, and some of them went to the Episcopal Church out there that it started. Mm-hmm. My folks went there for a while.
Who was the head of that church?
I think at that time it was this Father Vallott.
So your parents went to the to Vallott's church before the Spiritualist
mm-hmm.
church?
My mother's family did anyway. I never heard my father say anything about that, but I know my mother did. And then when the Spiritualist man came and established that church, of course he had services, and there was no building there then, so they had their services in the homes, these people.
Yeah,
and I don't remember just when that church was built. I think that's when it was really built, was in 1886 or so, around in there sometime.
What sort of controversy was there within the Catholic Church that made so many people decide to?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't think I would tell what had happened.
Can you tell why your parents decided to leave the church with Vallott and finally turn to the Spiritualist Church?
Well, I think that was, I really don't know. The Chris said Vallott controversy was quite something too, but I don't think they had anything to do with that.
Hmm.
I think he was still a priest there when they left, and I don't think my father went there at all. He didn't go anywhere in between that time.
Do you have any memories of the types of services and Sunday school classes that you had at the Spiritualist Church that you could tell us about?
They had a Sunday school early, but I don't remember much about that either. They were just like in any other Protestant church, I think.
Hmm.
Except they have different tenets and different beliefs. And
do you remember that it's kind of a unique church? Do you remember that the services were somehow different, how they conducted their services?
Well, they have a special time where they're supposed to, those who have passed on can come back and talk to their loved ones through this medium or through the preacher.
Did you ever take part in something like that? Did you ever experience it?
Well, I think everybody did some little bit, you know.
That's really fascinating. Okay, if that's it for church history, do you have anything more to say about the spiritualist church?
You know, before this, when the people first came to America, these Belgians first came to Gardner, most of them were Catholics. And they didn't have very good means of transportation, so they built several little churches. There was one built north of the Spiritualist Church. There were two built there. One was built on the high ground, so they had to bury the dead on the top. They hauled ground there to bury their dead.
Oh, yeah.
Then across the swamp, they put another one. They built another little church because in the wintertime and in the spring, travel was so bad across that swamp that they couldn't get there. So they had another little church there. I don't know if they had the same priests or how it was, but those churches were only about a mile apart.
Yeah.
And then there was one at Brussels.
Are those churches all in use today?
No, there's only the Brussels church left. After a while, when travel got better, these other churches, the buildings are gone and everything. Cemeteries are still there, though.
The above ground cemetery?
They say they can find traces about it. We went to look, but I don't know where that is. And I remember seeing it as a child, though, seeing the dirt piled up, you know, the ground piled up there.
Now, which church was that in association with?
Those were Catholic churches, those two on either side of the swamp.
Do you remember what the name of the church was?
I think one of them was St. Joseph's. That was the one on the north side of the swamp where my mother's people went.
Oh. Okay.
And they walked mostly to church. Horses had to rest on Sunday.
I'd like to hear a little bit about the hospital that your husband founded here in Algoma, and about how it was run and his early work with the hospital.
Well, he came here on New Year's in 1925, and for 2 years there was no hospital here. He had to bring his surgical patients either to Green Bay, Sturgeon Bay, or Kewaunee. And sometimes he had come from, when he interned in Milwaukee, he was at the Columbia Hospital, and there they had all the equipment, and he just longed to have something like that for himself to use. And in case of emergencies, it always was a problem to take the patient so far away, and and travel wasn't always easy either then in the winter, you know. He used a snowmobile that somebody had made from an old car. It had those skis in the front of it, and I don't know just how it was run anyway. And he hired horses for some of his calls. Well, then he bought a home on the west side of town, and Beloit had built a new hospital, and they had an ad in the medical journal. They were selling the equipment from this old hospital. They were getting all new things over there, so he went there and bought some beds. There were 12 or 13 beds, and four cribs for babies, and he bought the dressers and the chairs, little bells that you ring. They didn't have an electric system. They just had a little bell to ring by hand. And he bought the equipment from for the operating room from the Okato Hospital. They were getting a new hospital, so we went up there and bought all of their operating room equipment. And he fixed up an operating room over here, and the kitchen for the hospital was in the basement, and the laundry was down there too. We had a woman and a helper did all the work, the cleaning. They hired a registered nurse, so I always had a registered nurse there, and sometimes two, when they could get that many. And not much nursing help. They did have a woman, sort of practical nurse at night sometimes. Most of the time, I guess, she took care of the babies too in the daytime sometimes. And but they got good care because it was much like home. And yet had all the sterilizers and everything, you know, they were well taken care of besides having the home care, because those nurses did work long hours. They didn't expect to work 8 hours, and when there was something to do, they did it. They'd be awakened in the night in emergencies and stay up all night if the babies were being born. And
was your husband the only doctor there at first?
No, yes, at first he was there alone. He invited all of the doctors around to use it if they wanted to. And there were country doctors around that did, like Dr. Hirschbeck and Dr. Kirscher and so forth, used it. But it was too big an undertaking, too. It was too much work for him to run this thing, and some of the doctors hesitated about coming because it was his. So he, after about a year and a half, he sold it to the city, and it was city-owned then, and it still is. And that was run from 1929 to... when did they start? 51. The old one, the old hospital. That was the only one we had here, and it was quite popular. I must say it was a good thing to have in the city.
Yeah, I can imagine. How many patients could it take at one time?
They had 12 beds, but they used to have put extra ones up in the hall once in a while, and sometimes they weren't all filled, but in 4 places for babies, and sometimes they had more babies than that too.
What sort of operations could go on there?
Oh, all kinds of them. There were gallbladders and cancers and all kinds of them.
So
that they would have any place else except really major.
And what did you say was the date that it finally went out of existence, that it was no longer used?
Well, when the new hospital was built, then it still is the Algoma Hospital, Community Hospital, but they built it, but it went on in this old building until from 1929 to 1951. In the fall of 1951, the new hospital was ready then.
I've heard that there was a sort of watchtower on the hospital.
It was one of the first homes that were built here by the Hall family. One of the Hall brothers, they were the first original settlers here in Algoma, and they built this home with a cupola on the top with windows in it, where they used to go up there and watch when the ships came in, because the ships didn't come in on certain days like they would now, you know, certain times they wait for the ship at 2 o'clock, and that didn't happen. Sometimes it was on Tuesday, sometimes it would come in on Saturday, all depending on how the wind blew, because there were sailing ships.
Yeah.
So they would go up there to watch once in a while, and when they expected them, if they came in, and had no telephones at when the houses were built. And that's, there were two or three of the houses in town that were built with those cupolas on the top.
So the hospital was taken over from a house that was already built.
Mm-hmm.
Then. Was it donated or was?
No, Dr. Foshan bought it from the. It didn't belong to the Hall family anymore. They had sold it to somebody else.
Well, I'd also like to know a little bit about your teaching days in Gardner. Maybe some stories about the years you spent teaching the Belgian children.
My school was the first school I had was a one-room school in the Hurlash district in the township of Gardner. And I think that there all the children were of Belgian descent. So, and it was a small building, very crowded, and had a lot of children. The people of the district were so nice, so they were Belgian people, I guess, are nice, if I do say so myself. And, but they wanted the best for their children, and they tried to get it, so it was easy to teach. They cooperated real well. There were so many, and the time was so short, I worried sometimes, wondering if I couldn't have done more. It seemed some days we didn't accomplish much because the classes were so short. You know, we only allotted about 10 minutes for each class, and they'd run over sometimes, you know, get interesting, and something would happen, it would take a little longer. But it was, I think the children learned what they should anyway at the end. In the early fall, it was so crowded in that school that seats were all filled up, of course. And then later on in the fall, after the harvest was in, then some of the older children came back to school and hadn't graduated from the eighth grade, so they came back. And there was no place for them, so one of the school board members brought in an old kitchen table, put it in the back of the room, and a few chairs, and there's where those older people sat, the older students sat. And it was during the war. We had other duties. We had collected for Liberty Bonds and the stamps, had that bookkeeping to do, and extra. And of course, there was some patriotism to things patriotic that we should tell the children to, and we had work with them, telling them why we were in the war and so forth. And of course, they heard that at home too, a lot of it. Then at the second year I taught, they asked us to take an inventory of the whole district, how many cows, sheep, and chickens, and pigs. So we went around, there were two teachers in that school, it's a state graded school. We went around the whole district and visited everybody and take inventory of these things besides our schoolwork. Then one day the Red Cross came over with a bolt of outing flannel and a pattern to make, asked if we would, the women of the district would make pajamas for the soldiers, hospitals. So we started that business. And they did it at school. They worked at school mostly. They took it home to sew, but we cut them out at school and doled out the material to the women.
Do you remember about how many cows and pigs and
I don't remember what the inventory was. I don't know why they wanted that. That's government again. I suppose they thought if they needed some of these animals, they would be able to get them. Hmm. Well, that was quite a chore for us, I remember.
I can imagine. From what time in the morning till what time in the afternoon did school last?
From 9 till 4.
Now, about how many classes or what sort of classes did you teach?
Everything. It was from the first grade to through the eighth.
Oh.
We combined some things in the the first grade, of course, after they got to learn to read, they joined the set. We'd have the second grade come up with them. Because there were only one or two or three people and pupils in some of these classes, you know. Then there was the first and second, and then we tried to combine most of the third and fourth and fifth and sixth and seventh and eighth. But when they got to be in the eighth grade, they needed extra work, you know. And in some of these other classes too were graded, really.
Do you remember that there were nuns teaching at the public schools in the area at the time you were teaching?
No, I don't remember any of those either. But the teachers were so scarce at that time, you know, because the men that were teaching were eligible for the war. They were drafted, you see. And some older people went back to teaching, you know, take charge of these schools. And
At school, were the children encouraged to only speak English?
Yes, we had to, and they wanted to, too. They wanted to become Americanized, you know. They were Americans then.
Right.
And so we urged them to speak English. It didn't take them very long. Some of them came, when they came to school, didn't know how to speak English at all, but it didn't take very long before they learned it.
Hmm. So did you have to make any rules about speaking English, or did they?
Well,
do
I just—I don't remember that. I just forbade them to do it, because once in a while at recess I could hear them speak Belgian out there, but when they came in, they didn't. That was an understood rule, I guess.